was stared at from around corners and behind draperies. JB didn't catch much notice. Lori was openly ogled by the young man, as was Christy. But the height and bearing of the women created its own immediate barrier. There was rather more awe than there was simple lust. Most of the interest was reserved for Jack and Donphil. The Apache was a full foot taller than anyone else in the ville, and his clothes made him stand out like a cockerel in a henhouse. As he stalked barefooted through the winding cobbled streets, reflecting sunglasses shielding his eyes, every head turned to follow him. Every jaw dropped, and every conversation suddenly halted. Then they noticed Jack, bouncing along behind the long-haired scarecrow. The young boy nodded and smiled to everyone they passed, quickly picking up the habit of bowing to all of the women and girls. There was a fresh breeze in off the Atlantic, and it made his fine white hair dance and spin about his shoulders. A pretty blind girl was playing a dulcimer on a balcony as they passed, and Jack called out a bright good morning to her, making her blush and lay down her instrument and run inside her house. Before they'd gone a dozen paces, a man rushed from the white-painted building, face heavy with anger.
Outlander dog! Come thou here, thou muty spawn!
Ryan's hand dropped, ever so casually, to the butt of the six-hour pistol. Easy, Jack.
No problem.
The teenager stopped and turned calmly to face the enraged man, who was several inches taller and 100 pounds heavier than the albino.
Thou hast given insult to my poor afflicted child.
Then sorry. Not deliberate.
Muty! Demon! Thou shalt be beaten and driven from the ville for thy wickedness!
Boy didn't mean anything by it, mister. And he said he's sorry. Let it lay.
Ryan's attempt to pour oil upon the troubled waters was ignored. The man carried a stout cudgel, and he raised it above his head and aimed a blow at Jack's skull.
Jack!
Ryan hoped the white-haired youth wouldn't butcher the man in the street. Jack dodged effortlessly, dipping under the crushing swing, one of his many hidden throwing knives appearing in his fingers like magic. He held the leaf-bladed weapon by its weighted hilt, point up, like all classic knife fighters. He waited in a half-crouch, whispering to the man.
Last warning, best. Said sorry. Now get away. Cut you horrible. Peel your face like skin in a rat. Fuck off!
The angry father took 3 stumbling steps backward, tripping over his own feet and nearly falling. A muscle worked at the corner of his mouth, making his lips twitch and jerk. Ryan thought he looked like someone who'd been about to strangle a kitten, and found he was holding a panther. From the way the man was standing, slightly bow-legged, he guessed that he must have lost control in his sudden terror and fouled his dark serge breeches.
Best do like the boy says, mister.
They left him there, still holding his cudgel, knuckles white, face drained of blood, and carried on with their walk around the streets of Claggardville in the brisk fall sunshine. Twice they passed sec patrols. The first time they were stopped and questioned. With an infinite oppressive politeness, the sec boss carefully wrote down their details in a small leather-bound notebook, using a stub of lead pencil, their names and when they entered the ville, that they'd registered at the Rising Flukes Inn, and that they knew the regulations about finding work within 3 days, or they would have to leave.
Tightest little ville in all Deathlands you've got here.
The sec boss ignored Christie's comment.
Move along!
They went past a shop selling fruit and vegetables, the contents spilling out on tables over the narrow sidewalk. The owner, a stout man with jolly red cheeks and eyes like small chips of Sierra melt ice, greeted them.
Morning to you, Outlanders. A merry pippin to crunch, punnet of blackberries, lovely ripe pears from the Shens. What's your fancy, fine ladies and fine mariners? Come, taste.
Lori reached for the golden pear that the shopkeeper held out temptingly toward her, but at the last moment he snatched it back.
Why'd you did that?
Show thy jack, lady. Handful of jack buys a handful of good victuals. No jack, no eat. Thy credit runs only with Master Jedediah Rodriguez and the Rising Flukes, and no place else.
Then stuff it up your fat arsehole, you sad fat bastard!
The false smile was knocked clean off the man's plump lips. The quayside of Claggardville was bustling with action. Men heaving casks and bales, pushing small carts with iron wheels over the clattering cobbles. Mongrels slunk around, snapping at one another, cowering from the blows and kicks aimed at them. As they moved through, Ryan and the others could catch the scent of tobacco and liquor. An enormous man in a stained white shirt, who carried a pile of baskets filled with fish on his head, crossed their path.
Get out of the way, Outlanders!
The ships loomed over it all, masts rocking in unison on the gently rolling waters of the harbor. Doc pointed to one called Rights of Man.
She's a whaler. There are the ovens on deck there.
The one painted dark brown?
That's not paint. That's blood.
The last ship along the line was another whaler, painted in somber black, with a narrow white stripe running all the way around her, just beneath the rails. False gun ports were etched in white along her sides, and a white flag hung limply from the masthead. The men working on the dock seemed to be avoiding this ship. It was almost as though there were an invisible barrier erected on the quay. Nothing was being loaded or unloaded at that end of the harbor, and there was nobody to be seen on the deck of the dark vessel.
She's called the Salvation. Fine name for a whaler.
The seven stood and watched the ship, admiring the elegant lines of her yards and the four slim 28-foot whaleboats that hung from the davits on either side.
Huh. Everyone stopped.
It was true. Behind them, all along the dock, work had ceased as though a switch had been thrown. Every bearded face was turned toward them, staring in a fascinated stillness. The only sound was the sighing of the wind through the rigging and the scream of gulls circling around a small shoal of herring a quarter mile out into the bay.
Someone fired it? What do they want?
Something about the ship?
She looks normal enough, like the others. Sight cleaner than most.
True, Ryan. But there is something I like not about it.
Know what you mean. The feeling gets me across the back of my head and clear down my spine. Something about the Salvation just doesn't set right. Can't say what.
Yeah, I guess we can go. Find out later, maybe.
As they neared the turning into Tripod Alley, they came across a ragged urchin bowling a metal hoop, striking sparks from the stones. Ryan reached out a hand and took the hoop from the boy.
What art thou?
One question. Who owns the Salvation?
Everyone knows that, except Outlanders. Captain Quad, of course.
Ryan gave him back the hoop, and they continued on to the rising flukes.
No work?
No work.
All day in Claggartville. 7 healthy Outlanders, and no work.
The incredulity of the landlord was going on, and Ryan Cotter was already beginning to find it exceedingly tedious. Ever since they'd returned after exploring the Ville, he'd been on about work, counting off on his fingers the people that he knew personally who were almost begging in the streets and alleys to find men and women to fill vacancies for all manner of work.
Rory Starbuck the Chandler also runs the rope-making works. He could take on a couple of fresh hands with no trouble. The women, with their looks, would be welcome at Eleanor Goodman's gaudy...
He caught the eye of Doc Tanner and hastily changed his mind on this.
No, I didn't mean that. No. There's many taverns that take them as pot girls or cooks if they had the skill. The Indian could ship his harpooner on any vessel leaving harbor. There's jobs in some shops for... Oh, so many that it makes my head spin.
Why don't you just spin off and bring us some food?
The supper was baked fish, what Rodriguez called stargazer's pie. It had a thick golden crust with the heads of a dozen mackerels protruding through the top, eyes open, staring ceilingward. With it came some fried greens and large potatoes roasted in their skins, with butter oozing over the platters. They washed it down with bumpers of ale, perhaps the very same they'd seen being rolled in iron-hooped kegs along the quayside.